opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning and welcome to Nature Nuggets here on Radio Kingston. I'm Chris Baker, filling in for Laurel Sutherland. It's been a joy to step into the host seat for the month of February, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the guests Laurel has lined up for y'all in March. Radio Kingston is committed to building community and helping all of us who tune in feel a stronger sense of our interconnection and belonging in the place where we live. Laurel's mission when he started the Nature Nuggets show was to help expand that definition of community to embrace our more than human kin and to bring in a wide variety of guests who can help us get to know the astounding biodiversity of plants, animals, fungi, and even microorganisms we're so fortunate to share the land with every day here in the Hudson Valley. I was so happy to accept Laurel when he reached out to ask if I pinch hit occasionally as the Nature Nuggets host, since this mission is a very natural extension of the other work that I do. I'm the founder of Chicory Naturalist, which is a nature-focused book and gift shop at the Kingston Waterfront. We carry a lovingly curated selection of books and field guides for all ages, as well as board games, naturalist gear, toys, art supplies, a lot of locally made gifts, really anything that helps folks learn about and appreciate nature. We also have a comfy, cozy seating area and play area in the back so that community members of all ages can come, read, and relax. And we host a lot of community events throughout the year. In fact, today we have a puzzle swap down at Chicory Naturalist. So if you want to exchange any of your old puzzles for new, come through today. We really try to have a little bit of something for everyone because, after all, nature is for everyone. We are nature. And now more than ever, our living world needs every one of us to take an interest. As Laurel says, people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. Okay, so now it's time for Who's About Town, which is a segment a bit like the Society Pages, but for people who care more about squirrels than celebrities. So I've mentioned on this program before that I'm not the best at getting outside when it's the bitter heart of winter. Which I think it is safe to say we are in right now. But this week, I really felt like I was at a breaking point being inside, and I was willing to wear any amount of long underwear to get some fresh air. I've been really craving time in the woods, and I do actually have some favorite spots to visit in the winter months, some lovely moss and lichen walls, as we'll be talking about today. But since I've wiped out nearly every time I've walked from my door to my car since the last storm, I know I need to wait for this current ice to melt before going out on, earthen trails. But as we're always hoping to emphasize here on Nature Nuggets, you really don't have to travel to enjoy nature. It's all around us. So I did get out for a walk along the Rondout Creek Promenade with my friend Steph this week before work. We were looking for both some merganser ducks that my guest today said she saw there, and also for a wood duck that Steph had seen with her son earlier in the week. When we first got down to the creek, we could only see the usual mallard crowd, and further down the ice was totally solid across the creek. No ducks, but we were treated to songs and lots of colorful swooping by some robins and cardinals, and heard but did not see some tufted titmice as well. We decided to give the mallards one last gander on our way back through, and that's when we saw the wood duck, that's when we saw the mergansers, which I'll let our guest tell you about. And also, preening herself right there in the middle of the mallard flock was the wood duck herself. This is really not something you see every day because wood ducks don't tend to mix it up with other flocks. Like, some birds are social with other birds, and will flock together for security and safety. And wood ducks are just generally not one of them. They usually have small flocks of about 20 birds, and they live, as their name says, in the forest. So it probably means that she got separated from her own flock, and that she's hanging out with the mallards by necessity, but she might be hanging out there through the rest of the winter from what I read. So it's possible that we can all enjoy the sight of the wood duck for the rest of the winter. In the spring, she'll hopefully fly off to find her own people again and maybe find a mate. Unlike most other ducks, wood ducks perch and nest in trees for the most part. If you go down to the creek to see her, you can spot her. It's not really that tricky. She's about a half size. Really, she's about half the size of the other ducks for the most part. Her feet match her plumage, more of a yellow-brown than the mallard, like pop of orange. And very noticeably, if her head isn't tucked under her feathers, you can see she has very fancy white eyeliner that none of the mallards do. So, but just a quick reminder, because I have a few friends that would always like me to emphasize this. If you feel the urge to feed the ducks, our little wood duck visitor or otherwise, birds are not made to digest baked goods, however tasty they may be. It can give them tummy troubles, and it really just doesn't give them the nutrition they need. So it sort of fills them up without actually giving them what is like food for ducks. So instead, you can bring a bag of frozen peas or mixed vegetables is all right as well. But just say no to feeding bread to ducks, even if they are looking at you with those little ducky eyes. I know it can be hard because they are very used to being fed down there. There's also like duck feed, but most of us have some sort of frozen vegetables in the freezer that we can grab instead. So moving on, today we have a little change from our usual format. I'm really grateful for the Radio Kingston team for accommodating my request to pre-record the interview we'll play for you today, because this week just also happens to be Moss Appreciation Week, and I've been wanting to bring on my moss friend for months, so it was too good of an opportunity to miss. However, my moss friend also happens to be my nurse friend, and she got scheduled for work today. These things are kind of out of her control. So we sat down together on Tuesday instead. Julia Palmer was born and raised in Ulster County and went from enjoying our beautiful woodlands as a kid to studying them as a young adult. She holds a BA in conservation biology from SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry. And notably, as we discuss in our interview, she was introduced to the magical world of moss studying with the botanist and indigenous author Robin Wall Kimmerer. Julia recently shifted careers to become a registered nurse, but she remains a passionate bryophile and advocate for the mosses in her free time. We're going to take a brief break for words from the community, but we'll return for my interview with Julia Palmer after.
What does community radio mean to you?
I think of people from the community in front of a mic and people from that same community listening on the other side. Just like a conversation that's happening as you go on throughout your day.
Radio Kingston.
Many voices, one community.
Hi, I'm Maru from Repco, here to ask, what can Repco do for you? If you're looking to buy your first home, Repco offers free home buyer counseling and grants to assist with closing costs and down payment. If you need help with repairs, our rehab programs can assist homeowners and landlords in improving homes and making them safe and energy efficient. If you're interested in building community, we develop affordable housing, preserve historic properties, and support economic growth across the Hudson Valley. Repco is here for you. Let's continue to build for everyone together. Learn more about how we can support your housing journey at repco.org.
Radio Kingston.
Many voices.
Many voices.
Many voices.
One community.
Hi, this is Warren Lawrence. Be sure to join me every Sunday from 11 to noon for what we call the Sunday Morning Garage Sale. You're free, classified on the radio, right here on Radio Kingston. It's your opportunity to call in. You can buy and sell items, even vehicles if you'd like. You can tell us about your yard or garage sale, or if your church, your nonprofit group, or organization has an event, why not call that information in as well? The Sunday Morning Garage Sale from 11 to noon, right here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, and anytime at radiokingston.org.
The City of Kingston Office of Grants Management is hosting a free Grant Writing 101 workshop on Wednesday, February 26th. This free one-hour workshop is designed for beginners in the field, but those with more experience are also welcome. Advance registration is requested. You can register for both in-person attendance and the Zoom meeting online. Grant Writing 101, Wednesday, February 26th at 12 p.m. over Zoom and in person at City Hall, 420 Broadway in Kingston. To register and for more information, engagekingston.com and click Grant Funding Report. Welcome back to Nature Nuggets here on Radio Kingston. I'm Chris Baker, filling in for Laurel Sutherland, And my guest today is Julia Palmer, our guide to the wonderful world of mosses. Let's get into it. Julia Palmer, thank you so much for being here today. This has been a dream of mine since I first started co-hosting, guest hosting Nature Nuggets, because you are my moss friend. And I love moss, but I don't have nearly as much knowledge about it. And I'm always eager to learn more. But just to start us off, as we are wont to do on Nature Nuggets, do you have any nature observations from this week that you'd like to share with listeners?
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm very excited. I have not been spending as much time in nature as I would like to be, but this morning I went on a walk and over the weekend.
Yeah.
What is today? Today's Tuesday. So the common mergansers are in town. They usually show up in Kingston in like January, February.
Weird duck season traditionally, right?
I guess yeah. So.
That's a Rosemary Moscow joke, but just that it's like of the birding seasons. It's like amazing migrations. And then in the winter, it's weird duck season.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. The only weird ducks of the season I know are the mergansers.
Have you ever seen a bufflehead on the Roundout Creek?
No.
worth keeping an eye out for. But the mergansers are so beautiful.
Yeah. This morning, I saw them on the creek. I was walking along the water by the Clearwater where it's docked. And they have the bubblers on to keep the water, the ice melted. And they were hanging out in the pool. And they saw me and they went under and disappeared. And then I went over to the other side of the boat and they popped up and they saw me and they just... was like chasing them around and they clearly did not want me to be there.
So unlike the mallards on the creek, they are obviously not expecting to be fed.
And then all the mallards came and literally flew over and landed on the ice and just stared at me.
They were very different. Do you have any frozen corn with you? Well, that's a joyful sight. Yeah. And since this is an audio medium, can you describe a little bit, if people want to keep their eyes out for the mergansers, what they look like? Because they're a different looking duck.
They are. It's hard to get a good look at them. They're like slimmer than the mallard. I imagine if you had, I think they have a little bit of like rust color on their head and sort of like spiky, like spiky-ish feathers, like going backwards. I don't actually... I haven't seen them up close, but, and then I think, yeah, they're slender.
And they have kind of dotted, black dotted with white. Is that right?
I'm not sure. Okay. They do have white on their wings. But one distinguishing thing is that they're diver ducks, not, dabbling ducks.
That is not is that a real term? Dabbling ducks?
Wait.
I love that.
Yeah. I think,
okay.
I could be wrong. I think so. So they'll dive under and they'll disappear.
Okay, that's a good thing to
look
for. And
they'll pop up in other places, yeah.
I'll put a picture of mergansers on the Instagram too.
Cool.
I know that growing up here in the Hudson, I know you grew up here in the Hudson Valley. I'm curious what your first memory of really seeing and appreciating moss was. Do you have a core memory of moss that set you on this path?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I grew up around a lot of moss, but I honestly I don't know that I really noticed it.
Yeah.
I guess.
I would definitely say the same about mushrooms for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I grew up near the Gunks, and so there's so many beautiful moss covered rocks. Around. And so I think I noticed them in the landscape, but I think it wasn't until I went to school and I had the luck of taking a class called The Ecology of Mosses with Robin Wall Kimmerer. And she really showed all of us that they were there and what they were and how special they were.
Oh my gosh.
So,
And that's a big part of what I'd love to talk to you about, but just to put a pin in that for one moment, because I think backing up and just addressing what is a moss, because as I think we've gathered, mosses are a topic of a lot of passion for a lot of people, but also, like, I think they're kind of mysterious because they're not vascular plants. So could you just tell listeners what a moss is?
Yeah. So mosses are plants. They are some of the earliest land plants. So they evolved from, single cell green algae is a plant, right? It's like they're all in the kingdom Plantae. So they evolved on land from, there were some green algaes that were growing on land. I don't know the whole evolutionary history, but they're pretty ancient. Some of the first land plants. And they're, if you look at them up close, their structure pretty closely mimics that of like other larger plants, but they don't have any vascular tissue, which are the specialized cells that a lot of plants have that transport water and sugar up to the leaves from the roots. And they don't have roots. So they're non-vascular. They don't have true roots. And because of that, they have to like take water and nutrients in through their leaves.
Oh.
So the leaves are often just one cell thick because of that. And that's why they grow so small, because the vascular tissue
only
is also...
Only one cell thick?
Oh, yeah, a lot of the leaves are just one cell. Yeah, so they're so sensitive.
They really... Wow. Also, that when we were talking about how soft they were before the show, it also kind of makes sense if you're like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So vascular plants, famously, trees, mm-hmm. all flowering plants. Conifers, but mosses also have a special difference in that how they reproduce, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told you, Chris, I didn't want to talk about this.
Oh, well, I don't mean
just kidding.
No, the sex life of mosses is very complex, and we will not be getting into how mosses get it on, because it is too complicated for radio or for us. But just in terms of that they produce spores rather. I guess mm-hmm. I was getting that they produce spores rather than seeds. So
mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes creates a little confusion with mosses and fungi. But they're two different, even though they have the same reproductive strategy. They're totally different organisms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are spores and there's sperm. I don't know much about mushrooms, but basically, I'm not going to get into it because it's confusing. But basically, the sperm needs to find the egg, and there's male and female plants, and there's dioecious plants that have both reproductive parts.
I know water is involved in it, as in a lot
water,
of parts of mosses' lives.
Mm-hmm.
So to get back to your studies with Robin Walkimer, and for folks who are not familiar with Dr. Kimmer, I think Julie and I would both highly recommend checking out her many published works, including her most recent book, The Serviceberry, and her first book, which was Gathering Moss, which is how I first started getting into moss. And I think a lot of people sort of enter the world of moss through Robin Walkimer's love. But she's like, can you tell a little background about like who she is in the world? A little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to make sure I do her justice. So she is a professor at SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry. Also director of the center, I'm going to not get the name right, but the Center for Indigenous Peoples in the Environment, mm-hmm. I believe, also at the college. Author. I mean, she's an artist and she's a scientist and she just writes beautifully, whatever she writes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot about blending, Western botanical studies with indigenous knowledge and sort of looking at ecosystems in a more holistic way than some of the more fractured ways that
mm-hmm.
A lot of Western ecological or like colonial ecological studies have, and like more blending ways of seeing and understanding the world, which
mm-hmm. yeah.
I'm curious how studying mosses under her changed how, I mean, obviously you said that was sort of your like moss awakening, but
mm-hmm.
How did it shape how you see mosses now when you move through the same forest that you traversed when you were a kid.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I like I said, I didn't really see them, I guess, but, you know, before I took her class. So in her class, we would spend time in like lecture, which was basically sitting in a lab with a microscope, and she would just talk to us about the life cycle, like going, you know, over the course of the semester, like building on that. But then we'd go out on field trips into the woods, and she would, I think she was showing us her favorite mosses, and a lot of the ones that she taught us are still the ones that I'm most familiar with, and that I think a lot of them are fairly easily, as easy as identifying mosses can be, if are fairly easily identifiable, and that they have some like larger showy characteristics. And I have some here. Unfortunately,
oh, yes.
Can't see them. But so I like to call them the charismatic mosses because they're easy to spot, and they're a little bit bigger, and a lot of the mosses in the same like genus share a lot of the same characteristics.
And what's the name of that genus?
So they're all different.
Oh, gotcha.
Genuses.
Genera, right? Or
yes. Yeah. that one is Climacium dendroides that you're holding right now.
It's almost looks like a feather, sort of. I mean, although it's like more, or like a seedling, like a like a Douglas, or like a pine
like a
seedling
pine.
Or something. Yeah, like a pine seedling.
So yeah, this one in particular, I feel like oftentimes a lot of mosses, like the way that they look, you know, if you really like get up in there and look at them, look a lot like larger vascular plants. So this one in
particular. But in miniature.
Yeah. So this one really reminds me of like the white pine that has like the bare trunk up until the very top with like the cluster of branches. And the name dendroides, you know, relates to tree. So it is like a little tree.
It does. Yeah. You can easily understand why you would pick that name for it. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
This one's even more like a feather. Who's this?
I think, I'm not positive. I think that is Tilia Crista Cristensis, which is a really fun name.
Yeah, that is a fun name, which was another question that I had about, because I feel like as far as identifying, like starting to identify different types of organisms in the world, it's like usually we have these beginner one. So like, say like, if you're thinking about birds, it's like even a little kid can be like, there's a cardinal because it's a red bird and the word is cardinal, and they can learn that at a very early age. And then you kind of build on this knowledge little by little over the course of, you know, either your life or if you're like, if you start to get into it at one point, sometimes it really like snowballs, but like there's like a beginner set. And with mosses, I've thought a lot about how the naming of mosses makes it so much harder to even get started with identifying mosses because, like, you know, you can kind of recognize the same sort of shapes, but a lot of, at least for me, the way that I learn is like, you know, attaching, and I think most people like attaching a word to it that helps you identify it. I was wondering, could you talk a little about like the naming of mosses and how it's different than other plants?
And I mean, I don't know, I guess. Yeah, there aren't a lot of common names. There are some. But the way that I learned them was mostly just by the scientific name, the binomial.
Yeah, like Latin words that are, and it, especially for mosses, it seems like very long, a lot of them.
Yeah, I know. There's some beautiful names. But I mean, yeah, so I guess I don't really, that's a great question. I don't really know why there aren't more common names. I can, I mean, I can share some that I know.
Of the common names?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like a good starting place for people who might want to start to learn tidy. What are some ones that we could say without speaking Latin?
So, I mean, I can teach you the names, but
well, we can put pictures.
We'll do a moss walk at some point, but so let's see. So this one we did Climacium dendroides, which is tree moss.
Oh, okay.
It's like a common name for it.
Okay,
yeah,
tree moss.
Let's see. Oh, this one is fun. This one is worm moss. So it kind of has like dense leaves that are like more rounded and
Worm-like.
Wormy, you see
it, right? I mean, it's a little bit disturbing thinking about it because that would be a lot of worms, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of worms.
Worm moss, okay. That's more accomplishable for me.
One really common moss that I feel like is, yeah, we can put a picture, is the one of the easiest ones to identify around here is it grows in like little, well, sometimes bigger or smaller little cushions, and it's called Leucobrium glaucum, and it's like a mint color, like I think
bluey kind of.
Yeah, like a bluish green light. I think glaucum, like the word glaucoma, means kind of like cloudy, and so it's got like this milky white greenish blue. And yeah, it grows in little clumps. So I have like this tiny little piece of one here.
Oh yeah, I think like pincushion kind of shapes.
And that's
like
what it's called, pincushion moss.
Oh, okay. I guess I've probably heard. I'm sure that just bubbled up. I didn't just like randomly associate those things.
I mean,
who knows?
That's how they get their names, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the little clumping mosses, which someone that we were just talking to, somebody who would like that growing in their yard, but it's hard to get mosses to grow in your yard.
Yeah. Yeah, they're choosy.
Awesome. Well, thank you for
Do you want one more?
Yeah,
okay, this
sure.
is another fun one. So also one of the charismatic mosses is Dicranum. So there's a lot of different species in this genus. And one of the common name is like broom moss, because one of the distinguishing features is that the leaves grow off the stem and like sweep kind of to the side.
Like a straw broom kind of?
Yeah. So if you pull it apart and like look at the individual, so that's like two individual plants right there.
Oh yeah.
They kind of sweep off to the side. So one, and I think there's another name that's like windswept broom moss.
Windswept broom moss.
Yeah.
That's beautifully descriptive, actually. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of, especially depending on the specific naturalist interest, there's a lot of like scorn for common names because they can be used for so many different, organisms. And sometimes those organisms aren't related, but it's like the descriptive quality of
common names is really helpful.
So yeah, we'll definitely put a picture of this. We'll put a picture of all of these beautiful mosses in the show notes. So another question that I had going back a little bit was just about how studying mosses, both like in college and then as just like an avid amateur, like I feel like the word amateur has this like freighted thing of like not being good at something, while it just really just means like you're doing something else professionally. You are helping people every day in your career as a nurse in really meaningful ways. But then like mosses are bringing this other energy into your life. And I'm curious, what is it about mosses that stuck with you? You know, there's so many things that somebody might study at a certain point in their life and maybe they enjoy it, but it doesn't leave a deep and lasting impact. And then there's the things that really take us and keep us for good.
Yeah, moss is definitely that for me. I think part of it has to do, one, with my initial teacher, Robin Wall-Kimmerer, who just, her passion for it just really infused into all of us. But also, they're so beautiful. They're so tiny. They're so intricate. There's so many different kinds. I think it's just the beauty of them, like the way that the light hits them and all the different types, like the shapes of the leaves on them, like changes the way the light reflects off of them. And yeah, they're just kind of mesmerizing, and they're soft and kind of brings you into this like tiny world when there's so much overwhelming stimuli happening all around us.
Makes so much sense.
And
I'd love to talk more about the tiny world of it all, but we'll need to take a break for a few community words.
The A.J. Williams Myers African Roots Center and Radio Kingston celebrate Black History Month. Join me in exploring the river of justice through the life of Thurgood Marshall. He was born on July 2nd, 1908. He's a pivotal figure in civil rights history. Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice, co-founded the NAACP Legal Defense Fund in 1940. He carved the path towards equality. His legal expertise culminated in the landmark 1954 case, Brown versus the Board of Education, declaring racial segregation in schools unconstitutional. Appointed as the first African-American Supreme Court justice in 1967, Marshall championed civil rights and equality through influential decisions. Marshall's impact extended beyond the courtroom. He mentored and advocated for the next generation, leaving behind a legacy of education and community involvement. Thurgood Marshall passed on January 24, 1993. Let's honor his legacy by navigating the currents of justice in our own lives. Marshall reminds us that the fight for equality requires persistence and courage.
What is important, a goal that is the basis of true democracy, which is over and above the law, and it's something that won't happen, but you must brave for it and work for it.
My name is Manuela DeSantis Sophia. This has been a Black History Month moment from the A.J. Williams Myers African Roots Center and Radio Kingston.
Hola, mi nombre es Emiliano y trabajo para Mid Hudson Energy Transition, una organización sin fines de lucro con sede en Kingston.
Hi there, my name is Emily and I work for Mid Hudson Energy Transition, a Kingston-based nonprofit.
Nos asociamos con la ciudad de Kingston para proporcionar estufas de inducción, calentadores de aguas con bomba de calor y bombas de calor portátiles de forma gratuita a los residentes de Kingston que reúnan los requisitos.
We are partnering with the City of Kingston to provide free induction stoves, heat pump water heaters, and portable heat pumps to eligible Kingston residents.
Obtenga más información y verifique su elegibilidad llamando al 845-293-7566 o visitando mid-hudson.energy.
Learn more and check your eligibility by calling 845-293-7566 or by visiting mid-hudson.energy.
Welcome back to Nature Nuggets show on Radio Kingston. I'm Chris Baker, filling in for Laurel Sutherland, and today I have an interview for Moss Appreciation Week I pre-recorded with my moss friend, and now your moss friend, Julia Palmer. Julia holds a BA in Conservation Biology from SUNY ESF and had the pleasure of studying with Robin Wall Kimmerer. Welcome back, Julia.
All right, welcome back. So we were just talking before the break about the tiny world of moss here with Julia Palmer. And I feel like within the tiny world part of it, a couple weeks ago, I tried to talk a little bit about, or I mentioned offhand, the concept of the boundary layer on air. And then I did a pretty bad job explaining it. And I was thinking you might be a better person to describe it. So I was hoping maybe you could give a little more background and help listeners understand why we can have Moss Appreciation Week in February, even though moss is a plant and most plants, we would not put their appreciation week in February. Why are mosses still green and beautiful and wonderful to look at through the winter?
Wow, great question. Mosses, I remember Dr. Kimmerer saying this in her class too, is mosses love winter because there's so much, well, ideally there's so much moisture. This year we've had a lot of snow and a lot of snow melt, and so that's really good for them. And they love sunlight, so they need water and sunlight to grow. In the winter, all the leaves have left the trees, and so the light's able to get down to the forest floor, where at other times of year it might not be able to, and they can thrive in like dappled light anyway. But in the winter, there's like an abundance usually of moisture and sunlight. So right now they're all under the snow, but they're happy. I think they're happy under there.
Well, and as soon as it melts, then you're like, oh, you're looking under there the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're wet and they're like gorgeous. And, you know, they like, they open up. So I'm going to get off track here, but so like, let me focus on the boundary layer. So I'm curious what you were talking about the boundary layer in relation to.
I'm thinking about the section of gathering moss for, in her book where she talks about like fluid dynamics and the like why the things are closest to the ground or like on tree bark are able to like exist in a different world basically than like the things that are taller.
Okay, yeah. So I think the way she describes it is like talking about airflow in relation to the to surfaces in general. Mm-hmm. So like any surface, it could be the ground, it could be a tree, it could be a rock. It could be like the Rocky Mountains is like a surface. So like airflow high above the surface is going to be pretty smooth because it's not impeded by any texture or like structure. And then kind of like how when you're in an airplane and you get high up, it's smooth. If you're like coming down in a mountainous area, it's really turbulent. So the air is kind of like bouncing off the surface and creating a lot of turbulence.
Yeah, that's a good like macro version of that people have can probably like have a sense memory of.
And then really close to the surface, depending on like what the surface is like, the air, gosh, how do I describe this? So it's usually a lot still, like more still if you're, say you're lying on the ground. I think one thing she describes in the book is like, if you're standing in a windy field and you lie down on the ground, it's going to feel calmer down there. And if you lie down in like a field of tall grasses, it's going to feel really calm down there because the grasses are sort of like buffering the airflow. And within that, the area of the grasses, there's less airflow essentially. And so it kind of creates a microclimate. So for mosses, I mean, because they don't have the vascular tissue, they can't grow tall. So they usually stay very small. And then down in the boundary layer, it can be more humid usually.
And this is usually like what, like even less than an inch off of a surface, right? Or like how, where would you say it? Like about an inch?
You know, I think it depends on the surface. Mm-hmm. So if it's like a bare rock, so like there are mosses that grow on bare rocks, and those mosses usually tend to be really tiny and crusty because the boundary layer is like smaller. Or like more narrow because there's it's like a bare rock. There's not a lot around to impede airflow. Mm-hmm. Whereas a moss in like a lush forest, I'm thinking of a particular one that can grow up to like 2 inches tall.
Oh, okay. So that's, yeah, taller than most mosses you think of. Yeah.
And so that boundary layer is going to be thicker, and maybe that allows the moss to even like grow a little bit taller in that area. So it's usually going to be warmer and moister?
Yeah.
Than the surrounding areas. So yeah, it kind of creates a little microclimate.
That's very conducive to plant life, which conveniently enough for, for mosses. And so that warmth also, I'm assuming, also helps them melt some of that snow off of themselves faster too, probably than...
Probably.
So I think that like, I think once you start to observe things in the boundary layer, there's mosses. Obviously, there's also like lichen, which I have talked about before, but love to talk about more sometime with somebody who, I have a couple lichen guests I'm hoping to get on, or like very small fungi. I'll have like monopolize this kind of amazing. It's sort of like it's a niche, and then also in some ways it's like everything. You can find mosses on so many different kinds of surfaces, right? And we were just talking during the break about mosses as a concept of like what an individual moss is versus a colony. And I think like there's, it's such a slippery idea, but I'm curious, like, I don't know the answer to this at all. Like, is a moss, like what is an individual moss? And then like, how is it different than say like a shrub or the other kinds of plants that people might be more familiar with?
Yeah. So mosses, I guess by their nature, grow in communities because
we love that for them.
Yeah. So they, you know, being in like a clump or a cushion, growing really closely together, really helps them hold on to water, which they need to grow. So, and also helps prevent evaporation. So like growing closely like that is really beneficial. I mean, they evolved to do that. But then within that community are individual plants, which in the moss language world are called gametophytes. So they're individual plants. And there's, I think I said earlier, there's like different, like there are male plants and there are female plants and there are dioecious plants. So yeah, I think that's one thing that is a misconception, because you really don't see this unless you get your face like right up in the moss and kind of like take it apart and look at it. But I think often when people see mosses, they just see like a carpet or a cushion, and like that is moss, but there are little individuals in there.
That might actually be like 1,000 mosses.
Oh, yeah. And so there's individual plants, and there's so many fun words that describe mosses. So there's two main growth forms. One's acrocarp, which is like more like a traditional plant growing upward. And then there's pleurocarp, which is like a more like a vining sort of type of
growth habit.
Is that
the ones that look a little more like carpet or something? Like that let go sideways?
Yeah. So okay. Yeah, they can grow. And I think really what it has to do with is like when they like produce their sporophyte, mm-hmm. to like form the spores. On an acrocarp, the sporophyte forms like at the top of the plant, whereas on the pleurocarp, they kind of like come up along the stem.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
And that like little sporophyte that you're talking about, it's like that, if you've ever seen mosses that have like a little, maybe a reddish part that's like poking up on top of it, that's mm-hmm. like its reproductive event, right?
Yep.
And also, speaking of the boundary layer, that's one way to get out of the boundary layer, right?
Gosh,
it's like you're sticking
up
like a tiny little flag with your spores, right?
Yeah. So the sporophyte grows up out of the boundary layer, so that the wind can like capture the spores and push them out and spread them.
It's
beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And I feel like we see a lot of mosses usually like growing, like different species of mosses growing in one area. Not always, but like sometimes mm-hmm. you'll see like so many kinds. And I don't know, for me, that's like also adds the part of the like obsessive little fairyland aspect of looking at mosses, is like all the biodiversity. I'm curious, like, are they very competitive with each other, or are they kind of communalistic? Mm. Like when you see like a lot of mosses on the same rock, are they like fighting it out, or
very slowly?
Yeah, very slowly.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. But I do, because I mean, sometimes you'll see like a cushion and then there'll be another kind that's growing out of it, and so they're growing in this like exactly the same area. I do know that Jerry Jenkins, who is the author of Mosses of the
Northern Forest, which we have at Chicory.
Which we have at Chicory Naturalist, has, I think, I don't know if it's that book or another book, where he studied like where on tree trunks and rocks certain mosses like to grow. So there are like patterns to Like certain mosses only like to grow on the top of rocks, and certain mosses only like to grow on the sides of rocks. And then certain ones only like to grow with other certain ones. So he's done a lot of like the spatial ecology of mosses. That's really interesting. It's something that I don't know too much about, but.
And I'm imagining adds to the complexity of anybody trying to garden with mosses. If you're,
yeah.
You're like, what is the exact positioning of your surface?
Mm-hmm. Is the rock basic? Is the rock acidic? You know, it's, they're very particular about where they grow.
And they've been doing it for millions of years, so obviously
not,
it's working.
They're not interested in changing, no.
You were saying also that they grow very slowly, so I think that's kind of like from a conservation side of things. I know like there's a lot of issues with people uprooting mosses for like floral arrangements from the Pacific Northwest. Like how long does it, like if you see... You know, I'm sure it varies, but like if you see a really flourishing colony of moss, like how long might it have taken them to get to that point?
Ooh, I don't know.
Are they like, but they're slow growing compared to other plants? Like,
yeah, they're very slow growing, but and also, you know, like the like an individual plant, you know, I don't might be a shorter amount of time, but. The significance of the growth is like reflected in the extent of the community. I do know, yeah, often, like you said, like large mats of moss are collected for floral arrangements. I remember I was in the city once and I went into this shop and there were just jars of, you know, there's a label on the jar that just said moss, and then in there was just like moss that had been spray painted like an emerald green, you know, because aww. Moss is like they turn brown after a while when they dry out.
Just make fake moss at that point.
Oh my, yeah. And so, you know, just being so like knowing all of their names and being so familiar with them all, it just was very depressing being in there. And I was even like, I went to the one of the salespeople and I was like, do you know the name of this moss? Like this is, I was just like telling them their names and they were like, I do not care.
The person was like, I just work here. I don't know anything. But it is, it's like, yeah, it's hard to see that sometimes. So one thing that we're learning is that being friends with moss means you can go to where they are, you can pet their soft, you know, colonies, but we really want to be leaving them where they are for the most part, right?
Yeah. I mean, I will go and collect some every once in a while, and I'll just take a very small section from the edge instead of the center, although maybe I don't know how important that is, but yeah, I would just leave it there. I wish I had a number for how many years it might have taken for like a large area to grow. But
well, I think if you're thinking years, not months, it kind of puts a perspective on it compared to garden plants or something, you know, something that you think of as like being a really renewable resource with like how fast it grows versus something where you're like, yeah, it took years for them to make it those few inches.
Yeah. I mean, a century, I feel like. For some areas, like up, if you go up to Mohonk, there's some really amazing, I was going to suggest some moss areas.
Oh yeah. So that actually brings me to my last question for the day, which was, since it is Moss Appreciation Week, how can listeners go out and appreciate moss? What are your recommendations?
Yeah. So, okay. There is a lot of snow on the ground. But, you know, you can always move some snow if you need to. But I have a few specific recommendations for areas to go. So anywhere up at Mohonk or in the Gunks, there's just a lot of really beautiful mosses up there, a lot of mosses that like to grow on the type of rock that is up at Mohonk. Some of my favorite mosses. I won't say all their names because they're just mouthful, but... yeah, just beautiful. And then,
and also, I just want to mention that you can check out passes at the library sometimes.
Oh,
public libraries to be able to visit the park. Yeah.
Thank you. Because that is one bummer thing about Mohonk. I love you, Mohonk. And then another area, which actually is part of Mohonk Preserve, is the Giant's Ledges Trail, mm-hmm. which is just south of the Rosendale Trestle. And at near the end of it, there's like a little overlook, but you kind of go through this area. It's like a, not a crevice, but like the path goes through these like big rock formations. And there's a lot of really beautiful mosses there. And then also, this is a little farther away, but in Dover, Stone Church is like a, mm-hmm. Some kind of park or preserve. But there's a structural formation that's called Stone Church, which is why it's named that. And there's like a stream that runs through, and there's a lot of like spray from the water. And so there's some amazing, like really big, luscious, like colonies of mosses and liverworts there. And also, if you find some, I mean, it's winter, the snow is melting, they're going to be wet. But if you, I highly recommend bringing a spray bottle with you when you go out, and not to go crazy, although it's hard to not want to spray everything. But if you spray a little patch of dry moss with some water, because it's like one cell thick, you'll see the mosses kind of like the leaves will just open up, and the green color becomes more vibrant because of the chlorophyll gets activated. But when you do that, you kind of like wake up the moss. And so, you know, just sparingly, but kind of like you can look how dry moss looks in relation to wet moss.
Wow, that is a great
tip. Which is very
tip.
Special.
Yeah, I'm going to do that next time cool. I go out. So thank you so much for coming on Nature Nuggets.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, making this dream come true. And everybody go out and appreciate some moss today. So that was my interview with Julia Palmer. Thanks so much to Julia for making the time in her week. If you'd like to go more in depth with the topics we discussed, I strongly recommend the book Gathering Moss by Robin Wall Kimmerer, as we discussed earlier. Her most recent book is also really excellent, and I'll take this opportunity to shout out the Chicory Naturalist Book Club, which meets monthly at the shop at 25 Broadway at the Kingston Waterfront. Our read for this month is Kimmerer's new book, which is called The Serviceberry, Abundance and Reciprocity in the Natural World. And I think a lot of people who have read it, it came out in the fall, and it's definitely hitting into the collective zeitgeist. It's really well timed with what we're going through as a country right now, and imagining new ways of being with each other and with the natural world. And so our book club, if you'd like to discuss it, if you have already, also it's a very short book. So if you want to pick up a copy and read it, you can probably do that in a lovely afternoon. It meets this coming Thursday, February 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. And also, I've fallen down on the job a bit this month with offering some naturalist community events to attend at the end of episodes, which is something we normally try to do. I haven't been as inspired to get outside myself, but again, that's kind of something I'm trying to move away from. And I think at this point in the winter, it's really important that we all get out of our house as much as we can. So I've wrangled up some great options to add to your calendar in the next couple of weeks. The first one is actually today, so I know it might be a stretch, but it's from 12 to 3 p.m. And Tom O'Dowd of the John Burroughs Natural History Society is offering a winter woody plant walk at the Falling Waters Preserve, which is a really beautiful and very accessible scenic Hudson preserve in Glasgow, New York. So it's pretty close by. I know it's a tight turnaround, but if you are interested, you're looking for something to do right now, you can find more information at jbnhs.org and click over to the events tab. Tom is really a wealth of knowledge, and also like about trees and our forest ecosystems. And as are all John Burroughs Natural History Society events, this one is free. And then next up, because it's just about this time of year, which is very exciting, there will be a workshop at the Ashokan Center called Maple Sugaring, How to Tap a Tree in Your Backyard, which is tomorrow, Sunday, February 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m.,
And again, for anybody who doesn't know, the Ashokan Center is just about 30 minutes away on the northern edge of the Ashokan Reservoir. You can learn about how to identify and tap maple trees with Del Orlowski and Ryan Trapani. This event is ticketed, but has sliding scale options and free kid tickets. You can sign up at ashokancenter.org, ashokancenter.org/events, and also save the date for their Maple Syrup Fest, which will be on March 14th and is always worth a visit. The next step is on next Saturday, March 1st, there's going to be a winter hydrology walk with Tim Koch and Max Kelly of the Ashokan Watershed Stream Management Program at 12 p.m. at the Israel Whitman Sanctuary. It's just right outside Woodstock, New York. This one sounds really interesting to me. I'd love to attend if I weren't going to be at work, and it will get you outside in the beautiful woods. So for more information, you can head to woodstocklandconservancy.org. Then this one's just for me. Next weekend, I would be remiss not to shout out the Adams Farriker Farms Garden Show, which I thought everybody went to every year, but I'm finding isn't the case. I'm not paid by Adams here, but I every year they transform their garden center into just like a wonderland of spring. And it happens on this weekend between February and March when we're really getting to the end of our wits with winter, but it's not even mud season yet, and that's going to be the next couple of months. And the Adams Garden Show sort of just transports you to a moment of high spring. They force blooms on all these different woody plants, beautiful bulbs, flowers. Like, you can take inspiration for your own garden, or you can literally just go in to sort of forest bathe. And all of the plants are labeled with a little placard, so it has a gently educational part of it. It's like a scavenger hunt for kids, but I take my family, and then I literally just go back to breathe in the flower air for as many days as I can until it comes down. So that opens next, next Friday, the 28th, and we'll go for a week. But as it is forced blooms, the earlier you go, the better it is. So I'll put the links to the books and events discussed today in the show notes on radiokingston.org, and I'll make sure to put a picture of the mosses Julia introduced us to on Instagram in the next couple days. Thank you so much for listening to Nature Nuggets today here on Radio Kingston. Please feel free to email us with suggestions or questions by contacting naturenuggets@radiokingston.org. And you can also follow the Nature Nuggets Instagram account, which is @HVNatureNuggets. Thanks so much. Sunny and partially gray. Yeah, but I was down, 'cause you'd already left town to the city. Hey, love, you stay pretty, and now where should I go? I'm all alone up here in the snow. I'm in the mountains by the hole. Wildlife, I give myself to you completely.
The The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY.